Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Let's preview the docket. First, we've got some more Murdoch news. Feds need help finding an alleged killer. Casey White, remember the escaped convict with the cop? Well, his attorney is preparing to throw now former disgraced cop Vicky White under the bus. Camille Vasquez, just call her partner. Mariah Carey gets sued. Brad and Angelina head to court. Will the Donkey Kong defense work? And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, everybody, before we get to the docket, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't, like the video if you do, leave me a comment below about what we talk about, and remember to hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And today is Tuesday, so what does that mean? That's right, we are going live tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, right here. And immediately following that live show, we will do our Patreon show, so if you're not a Patreon already, please join. And remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us anytime on your favorite podcasting app by simply searching Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, today is Tuesday, June 7th, 2022. Let's go ahead and open the docket. And as always, make sure you stick around for the dumb criminal of the day. All right, first, more Alec Murdoch news. That's right, it's been 1 year. 1 year ago, Maggie and Paul Murdoch were murdered on the family's Moselle property. Now, Alex Murdoch told police he arrived on the scene about 10 p.m. that night to find his wife and son murdered near the dog kennels. He originally told investigators that he had not been near the kennels around the time his wife and his son were murdered and that he was with his father at the hospital. He then stated that he came back to the Moselle property, took a nap, and then went to check on his mother, who suffers from dementia. He stated he did not see Maggie and Paul before he left. Now, Murdoch and his attorneys have said publicly that the Murdochs' whereabouts were completely accounted for that night and insist that his alibi was completely solid. So attorney Chris Wilson, who's a close friend of Mr. Murdoch, is now placing his friend and client, Alex Murdoch, at the Moselle property shortly before the murders. Now, Mr. Griffin contends that Murdoch, a person of interest in the investigation, left the estate around 9 p.m. to drive to his mother's house, about a 20-minute drive, and then returned to the estate about 10 p.m. or shortly thereafter. The shift in the alibi may be due to some audio and video evidence obtained by the South Carolina Enforcement Division, which is known as SLED, that allegedly perhaps places Mr. Murdoch near the kennels that evening. Now, video found on Paul Murdoch's now unlocked phone shows Alex and Maggie talking by the kennels the evening of June 7th, 2021. So far in the investigation, high-velocity impact spatter was confirmed to be found on Murdoch's clothes, which places him at the scene of at least one of the murders. But still, no charges have been filed to date, and obviously we'll give Mr. Alec Murdoch the presumption of innocence until and if he's convicted at trial or pleads guilty. Now, it is not a secret that Maggie and Alex were allegedly living apart at the time of her death, and it has not been confirmed whether Maggie had met with a divorce attorney prior to her murder, but there have been rumors that Alex had been having an affair with another attorney. And on the evening of June 7th, 2021, Maggie drove to Moselle, the 1,700-acre hunting property in Islington, South Carolina, because Alec reportedly asked her to meet him there. Sources close to Maggie say she told them she was nervous to meet with her estranged husband, but decided it was the right thing to do. Alex told Maggie that his father, Randolph Murdoch III, was dying and wanted Maggie to visit him, but it has now been revealed that Alex dropped his father at a hospital in Savannah earlier in the day of the murders. Investigators believe that Paul was shot twice with a shotgun, once in the chest, once in the head. Maggie was shot multiple times with a high-powered rifle. It's alleged that she initially froze and then ran from the gunman before falling to the ground. She was shot again in the back of her head at a close range while lying face down. The two weapons have not been found that were allegedly used in this double homicide. Now, Alec Murdoch called 911 at approximately 10:07 p.m. that night. There is no video footage of the killings due to the remote location of the Moselle property, and Maggie's cell phone was found the next day on the side of the road, well away from the murder site. Now, SLED hasn't commented on whether the investigation includes gunshot residue, DNA, spatter, footprints, fingerprints, cell phone location records, and the like. The night of the killings, it rained, possibly perhaps complicating the gathering of evidence at the scene. Whatever evidence has been collected, it is not enough at this point for SLED to feel secure enough to obtain a conviction in court. Now, SLED has announced that they will exhume the body of Gloria Satterfield, the Murdoch's longtime housekeeper who died from injuries in the Murdoch house. Now, Murdoch has been indicted on charges of engineering a scheme of stealing the $4.3 million insurance settlement from the Satterfield family. And in other Murdoch news, Judge Daniel Hall ruled Friday that Alex Murdoch had indeed violated a court order when he attempted to preserve family assets by waiving his right to his wife's estate earlier this year. However, Mr. Murdoch won't face any sanctions for the violation because he's already in jail and he has no access to any of his own money. Murdoch had filed a waiver with the Colleton County Probate Court disclaiming his right to Maggie Murdoch's estate, which includes the family's Edisto Beach house and their Moselle hunting grounds. Murdoch knew his assets had been frozen by the court in November. Both properties have been listed for sale and reportedly have buyers lined up and ready to go. The Moselle property, which has been rebranded as the Cross Swamp Farm, is listed for $3.9 million, and the Edisto Beach home is listed for sale and apparently has a cash buyer for $920,000. When this case first broke a year ago, and even before that, as it related to Paul's boating incident, which resulted in the death of Miss Mallory Beach, I just had a feeling there was going to be something interesting about this case, and I truly believe it gets more interesting every single day. And if murder charges are filed, and not saying they're going to be, but if they are in fact filed, things are going to get really, really interesting. The one thing that has been real quiet, though, is the gentleman that allegedly assisted Mr. Murdoch in his alleged suicide attempt. That case has been real slow, real quiet, and it really makes you wonder what's going on and what is he telling the police, if anything. All right, next, the feds need your help. The United States Marshals Fugitive Task Force is offering a $5,000 reward for anyone who can generate a tip that leads to the whereabouts of Caitlin Armstrong, who's wanted for the murder of cyclist Mariah Wilson on May 11th in Austin, Texas. Now, on May 14th, Armstrong was spotted on surveillance footage at New York's LaGuardia Airport. The United States Marshals say that Armstrong arrived at Newark's Liberty International Airport on May 18th, the day after the Austin Police Department issued a warrant for her arrest. However, according to passenger records, Armstrong was not listed on any outbound flights from Newark. Investigators say they are looking for the possibility that Armstrong flew out of Newark, New Jersey under a fake name, or if she was just trying to make it look like she was flying that day. Marshall said that they knew how Armstrong arrived at the airport that day, but they cannot disclose that information. They also believe that Armstrong will likely make an error somewhere, and they will be able to arrest her and bring her to justice. Now, according to authorities, it is alleged that Armstrong was furious when she found out that Wilson had a brief relationship with her boyfriend, fellow cyclist Colin Strickland. On the night Wilson was killed, she had been out swimming with Mr. Strickland, and though he maintains that their relationship was completely platonic, Strickland has since left Texas and says he will not return until Armstrong is caught for fear that he might be her next victim. All right, remember Casey White, you know, the prisoner serving life that befriended a correctional officer, sheriff? Well, guess what? He's in court for that little escape that he went on, a little walkabout. And the attorney for Casey White says that he was in the care and custody of his prison guard slash lover, Vicky White, when she plucked him from jail, and says his client won't get a fair trial because of the intense media attention. Now, as you may recall, Casey and Vicky White ran from the Lauderdale County Jail in Alabama on April 29th in a patrol car. They then switched vehicles and were on the run for a week before police finally caught up with both of them. Vicky, it's reported, shot herself as the cops closed in on the couple. Now, Casey White is back in custody, facing additional charges to the murder he was already accused of when he escaped with Vicky. In a series of motions filed by Casey White's attorney, they give us a little bit of an idea how they plan to defend their client. They wrote that he was in the care and custody of Vicky when he allegedly escaped. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, say no more. A suggestion that he intends to blame the entire crime spree on his now deceased girlfriend. The attorney also said that Vicky and Casey's story was the most viewed story in the country, trailing only the war in Ukraine for several days. And Mr. White's attorney, Mark McDaniel, added, it would take a resident living in a dwelling without access to electricity or communication from the outside world from the last month not to know a significant amount of information about his client, his capital murder case, and his other legal troubles. Now, Casey White was due in court on June 13th, but his trial date has been pushed back thanks to his new legal team. They say they intend to rebuild his case from the ground up and blame it all on Vicky. Well, why wouldn't you? But it just shows you what a classy guy this guy is. He was clearly a target of opportunity, and it would appear as though he really maybe didn't love Vicky. It was just an opportunity to escape. All right, Camille Vasquez, remember her? Of course you do. She was the young associate working on the Johnny Depp trial. Well, now you can just call her partner. That's right. Camille Vasquez was promoted to a new role in her law firm following the success in the defamation trial against Depp's ex-wife, Amber Heard. The Brown Rudnick Law Firm wrote in a tweet, "We are pleased to announce that Camille Vasquez has been elevated to partner." She was a key member in the litigation team that won a jury verdict for the actor Johnny Depp in his defamation trial against his ex-wife Amber Heard. And according to the press release issued by the law firm, Ms. Vasquez joined Brown Rudnick's Orange County office in 2018 as an associate in the litigation and arbitration practice. She has more than 10 years of experience as a trial lawyer in high-stakes disputes, including defamation cases, contract disputes, business-related torts, and employment-related claims. Now, William Baldiga, chairman and CEO of the Brown Rudnick firm, says, "We are delighted to welcome Camille to the partnership. Historically, we have reserved this announcement for the end of our fiscal year, but Camille's performance during the Johnny Depp trial proved to the world that she was ready to take the next step now. We are incredibly proud of her and look forward to what she will accomplish as our newest partner." So what does that really mean? Well, it means now that she gets to pay a share of all of the overhead expenses. Now, if there is any profit at the end of the year, she'll get a piece of that versus just her salary and maybe a bonus. But more than likely, that's right, Camille was probably getting a lot of people asking her if she wants a job. So the firm jumped in and made her a partner. Congratulations. Makes you wonder what the buy-in was, because you don't just become partner and one day they give you, you know, a percentage of something. You got to pay for it. All right, for a little non-criminal news, Mariah Carey is facing a $20 million lawsuit over her 1994 holiday mega hit, "All I Want for Christmas Is You." Now, Andy Stone, a musician from New Orleans, filed a civil lawsuit against Ms. Carey. Co-writer Walter Afanasieff and Sony Music Entertainment alleging copyright infringement and unjust enrichment over the song. He claims that he co-wrote a song also titled "All I Want for Christmas Is You" in Nashville that he released in 1989. Mr. Stone says that his version of the song, which featured vocals from Lisa Lane, received extensive airplay on the radio during the Christmas season in 1993, a year before Carey's song was released. Stone Song made it to number 55 on the Billboard Hot Country Singles and Tracks charts the following year. Stone's All I Want for Christmas Is You is a guitar-led country ballad, while Carrie's is an up-tempo pop track, and the two songs don't share lyrics aside from the title. Despite their musical and lyrical differences, the filing claims the defendants, Mariah Carey, Afanasieff, and Sony, never sought or obtained permission to use the song's title. Additionally, it states that Stone never gave permission, consent, or license to the title. Stone's lawyers claims that they initially reached out to Carey and the other defendants in April of 2021 regarding the unauthorized use of the song after not being able to come to an agreement about the usage. Stone made a personal request to send a cease and desist order to Carey, whom he claims continues to exploit his work despite the cautionary letter. And since the release, Mariah Carey's Merry Christmas album song All I Want for Christmas Is You has received yearly radio play, topped the Billboard Hot 100, and has sold over 10 million copies. Stone's All I Want for Christmas for You is continued to chart on the Billboard's Hot Country Singles and Tracks through 2000, but was bumped off the list when Kelly Clarkson released a cover version. According to a study by The Economist in 2016, Mariah Carey's version of the song has amassed over a billion streams on Spotify and has earned her at least $60 million in royalty. It makes you wonder why Mr. Stone waited all these years to finally come and sue Ms. Clarkson. There is a thing called statute of limitations. There is also a defense called latches, which is basically, hey, you waited so long, you shouldn't be entitled to anything if you're entitled to anything at all. Could be a shakedown, could be a legitimate claim. Let me know what you think. Another couple, they're accusing each other of doing bad things, or former couple, I should say, right? Brad Pitt is accusing his ex, Angelina Jolie, of damaging the reputation of the wine business they previously co-owned together because she sold her half to a Russian oligarch. Now, back in 2008, Pitt and Jolie bought a controlling stake in the South of France vineyard and home Chateau Mirabal, where they later got married in 2014 and spent several family holidays together throughout their relationship. In Pitt's latest court filing in his ongoing battle with Jolie over the sale of Mirabal, Pitt claims that Jolie intentionally sought to inflict harm on him by selling her interest in the wine company. Pitt also said that the two agreed they would never sell their interest in the family business without each other's consent. Pitt's legal team writes in the documents filed with the court that Mirabal became Pitt's passion project that grew into a multi-million dollar global business and one of the world's most highly regarded producers of rosé wine. This is all because of his work. The actor accuses Jolie of contributing nothing to Mirabal's success, and Pitt's lawyers say Jolie planned to sell her interest in October to Canut del Mundo, which is bent on taking control of Mirabal and is indirectly owned by and controlled by Yuri Scheffler, the Russian billionaire who controls the Stoli Group. Now, Pitt's lawsuit claims that Jolie's business, Novelle, owned his company, Mondo Bongo, the right of first refusal, and the sale infringed upon that right of first refusal. Jolie was previously cleared to sell her share in the estate back in September, and Pitt's team say Scheffler launched a hostile takeover of Mirabal and is trying to get a hold of confidential and proprietary information for the benefit of his competing enterprise. The document accuses Scheffler of having cutthroat business tactics and dubious professional associations, which in turn jeopardizes the reputation of the brand that Pitt has so carefully tried to build. They add that Jolie sought to force Pitt into a partnership with a stranger, and worse yet, a stranger with poisonous associations and intentions. Pitt is seeking damages in an amount to be proven at trial, plus the purported sale made by Jolie to be declared null and void. Pitt is suing for the breach of implied in fact contract, breach of quasi-contract, pled in the alternative, breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, abuse of rights under Article 6-1 of the Luxembourg Civil Code, tortious interference with contractual relationships, tortious interference with prospective business relationships, and constructive trust. You got to love a couple that just keeps their divorce going and going and going. Next, will the Donkey Kong defense work? That's right. The Donkey Kong defense came into play Monday at a civil trial over sexual assault allegations against Bill Cosby. Now, as his attorneys pressed a key witness over previous statements that she had played the arcade game during a visit with Cosby to the Playboy Mansion in 1975, 6 years before the release of Donkey Kong. Ha! Obviously, she must be lying. That's their argument. The testimony came in the Los Angeles County trial over the lawsuit of Judith Huth, who also began testifying Monday but did not yet describe her allegations that Cosby had allegedly sexually assaulted her at the Playboy Mansion when she was only 16. Why is somebody at the Playboy Mansion when they're only 16? Where in the hell were her parents? Why is this case only coming to trial now? My God, this case is almost as old as I am. Cosby denies all of the allegations made against him by her. Now, Donna Samuelson, a high school friend of Huss, who accompanied her, allegedly, and Cosby on a visit to the mansion, testified about the game room with an adjacent bedroom where Huth says Cosby forced her to perform a sexual act. Cosby's attorney, Jennifer Bongean, told Samuelson that she told police in an interview that she was playing Donkey Kong. Samuelson replied, "If I did, I did. I understand it wasn't around yet. Oops." Samuelson continues on to say that she was just saying that game in particular because she knew it was a game. She said it could have been Atari. Now, Huss attorney Nathan Goldberg said to the jury, "So she got the name wrong. So what?" Well, Huss is now 64 years old. Took the stand to recall the spring in 1975 when she met Bill Cosby, who was on the set of the film Let's Do It Again. She said that she remembers Bill Cosby whispering to her friend that Cosby invited the two to watch him play tennis at the Los Angeles Club the following Saturday, and the girls were excited because he was a celebrity. There, Cosby suggested playing pool, and the loser would have to drink a beer. Huss said that she had between one and three beers, and that they followed Cosby in Samuelson's Mustang to a mansion, which they later realized was the Playboy Mansion. Cosby's attorneys acknowledged that he took the girls to the mansion, but deny any sexual assault occurred. They have described Huss' lawsuit as a scheme to cash in on the photo that they allegedly took that day. We'll see how that one turns out. And let me know, do you think someone should be able to sue for something that took place 50 years ago? You know, normally in most cases there's a statute of limitations because people's memories fade, documents disappear, emails are deleted, photos are destroyed, surveillance cameras go away. At a certain point, you kind of have to say enough is enough. I get it on a murder case. I understand sexual assaults are very serious. Here in the state in which I practice, basically there is no statute of limitations for any of those type of allegations. But on a civil side, normally you've got 3-5 years, something along those lines, to bring a case. If you don't, you're forever barred. You think that's fair? I don't know. Let me know. And finally, our dumb criminal of the day. A burglar broke into an apartment in Pennsylvania, but only stole a bag of frozen pierogies, valued at $10. Cops say the suspect burglarized the apartment in Trout Run and made off with a 5-pound bag of Mrs. T's pierogies. The suspect also caused minor damage to the drywall in the kitchen. The investigation is ongoing. So if anybody has any information as to the $10 in stolen pierogies, please let the police in Pennsylvania know. And if somebody finds this guy, really, find out why he would only take pierogies. If you're going to commit a burglary, break into a residence, go big. I'm not encouraging people to break into anyone's place or take other people's things. I'm completely against that. But I'm just saying, boy, that's dumb. All right, thanks for watching. Don't forget, please join us this evening, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. We go live. Then we'll have our Patreon show immediately following that. We'll see you tonight. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for watching Crime Talk.